Audio guide for the Alabaster Echo Museum. The Alabaster Echo Museum in Volterra is housed in a fine example of medieval architecture, the Minucci Towers. The display spans three floors. On the second floor, there is a reconstruction of an alabaster workshop and panels explaining what alabaster is and illustrating the working techniques. The first floor presents the history of the art of alabaster carving within the territory of Volterra from the Etruscan era to the end of the 19th century, and the ground floor exhibits contemporary works of art created by local artisans. As the name of the museum suggests, this is not only a museum where objects of historical, artistic, and scientific interest are exhibited and preserved, but also offers a holistic overview and study of the relationships between human groups and their physical environment. The Alabaster Echo Museum is therefore an environmental museum that tells the story of an ancient craft specific to Volterra, from the excavation to the stone to its production and trade, through the centuries to the present day. The Alabaster Echo Museum system is situated in the province of Pisa, the geographical area where alabaster is extracted and carved. Volterra, Castellina Marittima, and Santa Luce. Climbing the stairs to the second floor, we can begin to understand what this luminous stone is all about. Alabaster is a mineral, a fine-grained variety of gypsum. Chemically a salt, the stone is made up of minute crystals of chalk, which can only be seen through a microscope. As these microcrystals filter the light, alabaster is a luminous stone, often referred to as the stone of light. So soft as to be readily scratched with a fingernail, alabaster measures 2 on the Mohs scale of mineral hardness. Talc measures 1 and a diamond 10. It is thus softer and easier to carve than marble. The origins of alabaster date back to the Miocene period, about 6 to 7 million years ago, a period of strong earth movements and deformation of the earth's crust. At first, this phenomena led to the rising of the seas, and later to the ebbing, favouring the formation of salty water basins, and thus creating an ideal environment for the eventual formation of alabaster. The high level of salt in the water deposited hydrated calcium sulfate. Chalk deposits, which gradually increased in size, forming the classical spheroidal shape of the alabaster stone. Further earth movements buried these sediments under clay. Today, alabaster is both mined and quarried in compact, ovular-shaped masses, known as balls or bowls. The different varieties of alabaster depend on the chemical features of the terrain in which it is formed. The main varieties are Scaglione, a translucent alabaster mined at Castellina Marittima, Pietra a Marmo, which is white and opaque, Bardiglio, a grey-veined alabaster, and Agata, whose natural colour will range from honey-coloured tones to shades of brown due to the inclusions of iron oxides and manganese. These examples are but a few of the varieties used by the artisans. There are also the calcareous sandstones, which vary in colour, sometimes yellow, red or grey, found in the Sant'Anastasio mines. Il Cenerino, a grey colour used in decorative work, and the translucent alabaster from the Fornia mines used for sculpture. There are 4 main categories of productive skills. Sculpture, animal figures, decorative work, and items turned on the lathe. Sculpture is considered to be the most complex of the skills on a small or large scale, as it includes all the specialized abilities. Then there are the artisans specialized in carving animal figures, in which the working techniques are similar to sculpture. The skills of turning on the lathe and decorative work are distinguished from the previous two, for they require different techniques and know-how. Hence, each category requires specific skills, method, and specialized working techniques. Once the alabaster ovule reaches the workshop, the gradual transformation of the stone may begin, depending on what is about to be produced. Before sculpting in alabaster, a plaster or clay model is created to scale, an example of which can be seen in the last showcase on your left. And with the use of a pantograph, an instrument consisting of pivoted levers, the points on the clay model are transferred onto the block of alabaster. The alabaster workshop is a place where you can still witness the traditions handed down through the centuries. Typically veiled in white dust, this is the domain of the alabaster artisans, a traditional presence here in Volterra, who through the years have transformed a craft that began through the need of making the most of the environmental resources into a cultural and highly skilled asset. At the end of the room, there is a reconstruction of a typical alabaster workshop with a classical treadle-powered lathe. Before the use of motorized machinery, the lathe was used to turn soft alabaster into vases, cups, and columns. The flexibility of the wooden pole connected to the pedal by a rope powered the lathe to rotate while the artisan carved the alabaster with a file. Next to the lathe stands a coppaia, a similar piece of pedal-powered machinery used for moulding. You can also see a display of hand saws used to cut the alabaster ovules, a collection of plaster models, and the tools and files used to carve alabaster. Some of the tools are also used by carpenters. Others are specifically made by the alabaster artisans themselves. Until the post-Second World War years, it was usual to find young apprentices in the workshops, the only environment where the traditional workmanship was handed down. Today, the students receive specialized training at the art school here in Volterra. Furthermore, the gradual introduction of machinery brought radical changes to the craft itself, and in time, traditional skills embraced new technology. New techniques were mastered and synthesized with ancient experience and learning. For the artisans, manual proficiency, highly skilled ability, experience and creativity are still very much the essence of the alabaster craft. The manufacture of alabaster is still handcrafted, despite the use of machinery. On this floor, there is also a display of artifacts produced at the end of the 19th and beginning of the 20th centuries. This was an era of great development in the alabaster trade, thanks to the phenomena of the travelling merchants, able representatives of some of the most prestigious workshops in Volterra, who brought alabaster all over the world. Mostly transported by ocean liners, the statues were carefully packed in wooden crates filled with wood chips or hay, which you can see on your left as you leave the room. Despite the careful packaging, often the works of art were slightly damaged on arrival, so the artisans would also travel with their delivery to assure the goods were in perfect order, and if not, repair the damage on the spot. First floor. The alabaster craft has been an intrinsic feature of Volterra since the 8th century BC. It was in the Etruscan era that the art of carving alabaster developed considerably. It has been said that alabaster was considered to be the stone of the dead by the Etruscans, and in fact we can still admire a large quantity of alabaster cinerary urns. The urns were placed in underground chamber tombs that hosted several members of the same family. The urn contained the ashes of the deceased, and the lower case portrays a variety of scenes carved in relief, including scenes of the voyage to the afterlife or mythological themes, depending on the date of production. The lid takes the form of a recumbent figure taking part in a banquet. During the height of the production of these urns, around the 2nd century BC, there were probably 3 workshops that produced no more than 5 to 6 urns per year for an extremely wealthy clientele. The alabaster used was exclusively local stone, extracted from the quarries at Olignano and Gesseri, both in the vicinity of Volterra. The Etruscans used chisels rather than pickaxes to quarry the stone from the surface, probably because they needed the light of the day to be able to work. The Etruscans preferred the choice of a clear alabaster with very few veins, in a soft tone of ivory white, similar to marble. The urns were finely painted with mineral colours, and often gold leaf was applied. Next to the urns, a small statue of a female figure and a lid of a crater, also in alabaster, produced during the Etruscan era. These were items offered in the tombs. We have no examples of the use of alabaster during the Roman era, while from the Middle Ages there are 2 decorated capitals which date back to the 12th century from the church of San Giusto. The capitals are decorated with Christian symbols, a mermaid with a forked tail, a symbol of luxury, and eagles holding the parchment symbols of John the Evangelist. The true Renaissance came with the discovery of alabaster as a quality stone in the second half of the 16th century, when some local artists began to produce tabernacles, ciboriums, holy water fonts, candelabras, and columns for the churches in Volterra. In the 17th century, the production was still very much based on religious works of art, similar to the previous century, until the close of the century, when the alabaster craft begins to take a more business-like quality. Both fine works of art and lesser quality art were produced for a private market that required reproductions of classical art, busts or vases. The Ingrammi factory, founded in 1791, marked a turning point in the evolution of the alabaster craft. Marcello Ingrammi Fei was convinced that the manufacture of the Volterran stone had great potential on an international level, based on a detailed study of models that were to follow the latest trends at that time and supported by a solid trading organization. The factory was established in the premises within the ex-monastery of San Dalmazio and employed more than 100 workers. As Ingrammi, wanting to improve the production and stimulate innovative artistic renewal, he founded a school of design and sculpture for his employees. An original poster printed in French offers precious testimony of how the selling was organized. The list of objects mostly included reproductions of Roman and Greek statues. As well as sculptures, the factory also produced neoclassical designs for clocks, vases in a variety of styles and sizes, as decorative elements in parlours and neoclassical style residences, architectural reproductions of monuments such as the triumphal arch and obelisks. When Tuscany came under French occupation in 1796, the port of Livorno was greatly affected, and consequently the export of alabaster. The slump in the market had a dramatic effect on the factory, which closed down a few years later in 1799. In the 19th century, after the Napoleonic Empire and a general recovery in trade, even on an international level, many workshops were established and began to flourish, mostly with the production of neoclassical artifacts, but also those inspired by Oriental art. The workshop directed by Amerigo Vitti played an eminent role in this recovery. A talented designer, he began to experiment with the innovative ideas and discovered how to harden and colour alabaster with a procedure which is still unclear to this very day. The Vitti workshop thus produced unique items such as tables and objects with intricate inlaid work and highly refined intarsia, made with hardened alabaster. Through boiling and soaking the stone in water and then dyeing it in colour. The pieces were then assembled to create flowers, birds, geometric or arabesque motifs. This technique brought much fame to the Viti workshop to such an extent to receive an acknowledgement from the Emperor Napoleon III. The master craftsman Luigi Funaioli, born in Volterra in 1830, made history by creating a series of reliefs, a kind of extremely refined and intricate microsculpture, the much-loved cameos. Portraits of the Florentine nobility or eminent political figures, exquisitely sculptured in a few centimetres, undoubtedly carved with tools specifically made for this delicate, highly skilled work. The collection of these works of art and the drawings now belong to the local art school. The ground floor. On the ground floor, there is a display of artifacts produced in the 20th century. At the far end of the room, there is the Nativity by Raffaello Concertini, a Volterran artist who lived from 1908 to 2001. At the beginning of the century, the Volterran artists were already taking part in international exhibitions and receiving prestigious acclaim for their work, but it was mainly in the 30s when Umberto Borgna became the artistic director of the Cooperativa Artieri that there was true innovation in design. Until the 1940s, there was a prolific production of ornamental objects in tune with the aesthetic quality of that era. The difficult years after the war encouraged the craftsmen to seek out new trading outlets, and the production moved into two directions: mass-produced ornaments or souvenirs and individually crafted art pieces. The 70s inspired many local artists to create innovative designs, and even today, despite the fluctuating market, these very same artists continue to sell their works and inspire the Volterran tradition. This has also been possible thanks to the specialised training received at the local art school. Some of the students' works are on display in the centre of the room. A porous stone, alabaster is easily dyed. The lamps hanging from the ceiling are an excellent example. Artifacts in a more traditional style, such as the finely hand-decorated plate, the engraved plate, intarsia lamps, a selection of animal and floral sculptures and vases are displayed with creative works of art that combine alabaster with other materials such as alabaster and resin, or the mask made out of alabaster and metal, and even a totally unique reproduction of musical instruments that actually sound.